Hello, and welcome back to Tracing Precedent with Lauren Giella, the podcast where I talk about the Supreme Court and pressing policy and constitutional issues affecting politics and law today. So I know I took a bit of a hiatus, but we're back with a podcast. I have been pretty active on my Instagram account at tracing_precedent, where I post a lot of things as well. So check out that if you want to learn more. But I am trying something new. I'm calling this the One Take Pod because I am home right now. And I fear that if I edit my audio too much on my laptop, it will crash and die. So I'm trying to do this all in one smooth take. So please bear with me if it's a little rough. Today, I'm going to be talking about the Supreme Court nomination confirmation process and a little bit about why this particular process is unique and holds more weight than past proceedings. So as the country mourns the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, sadness quickly turned to stress as we all looked ahead to what would happen next. President Trump and the Senate faced their third Supreme Court justice confirmation process in this administration. So I'm going to talk about the next steps in the process and why this time around things are a little crazier. So the first step in the process is the nomination. President and his staff made a short list of possible candidates. They chose Amy Coney Barrett. She was a previous top contender from his list to replace Justice Kennedy in 2018, but lost the nomination to Justice Kavanaugh. So Barrett has served as a federal judge on the Seventh Circuit Court since 2017. And so what that means is that she is on the federal appellate court. There are two parallel court systems in our country, the federal and the state level. And so she's at the appellate court, which is the second step of three. So there's the trial courts below. And if somebody is unhappy with the outcome of their case at the trial court level, they can appeal and go to the appellate courts to review that decision. She previously was a law professor at Notre Dame, and she is a more conservative justice who was a law clerk for the late Justice Scalia. So Barrett, like Scalia, is what is called an originalist. So that is what her judicial philosophy is. And I will be making another post and or podcast about judicial philosophy later on. But all you have to know for now is that she's an originalist, which means she believes the law should be applied based on its original meaning at the time it was written. Another philosophy associated with this is textualism, which is just looking at the text as it is written, and that's how it should be applied. She believes that judges should not be policymakers, that they should just stick to interpreting the law without looking at the underlying purpose or meaning of the law in the context of today. So she is a devout Catholic, something that Democrats believe will strongly influence her court decisions. And many fear, the primary fear is that she will vote to overturn the seminal abortion case, Roe v. Wade. Now, there was evidence that has come out recently that she wrote, when she was working at Notre Dame, that she wrote an essay about how she would overturn Roe v. Wade. And Trump made it a point during his administration that he would want to appoint a justice that would do this. Barrett has also said that she would not necessarily feel compelled to adhere to a precedent if the decision conflicts with the Constitution's original meaning. Precedent just means that justices are usually expected to decide in the same way that a case has been decided in the past. However, she is saying that if it goes against what the Constitution is saying, she sees no problem in overturning that. So despite her faith and this alleged association to the extreme Christian group People of Praise, which was said to inspire the dystopian society in Handmaid's Tale. Barrett has said, quote, "If you are asking whether I take my faith seriously and I am a faithful Catholic, I am. Although I would stress that my personal church affiliation or my religious belief would not bear on the discharge of my duties as a judge." Basically saying that she's able to separate her personal faith with her duty as a judge to interpret the law. Some other things about her record is that she supports Second Amendment gun rights. She's voted for stricter abortion policies and was very critical of the court upholding the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare, saying that the law was pushed beyond its plausible meaning to save the statue. So again, going back to her originalist views, she does not think that the law is flexible or can be loosely interpreted or adapted freely, as she believes it was with the Affordable Care Act. So once the nominee is named, the Senate takes over. The nominee meets with senators on the Judicial Committee for private screenings, and then the hearing begins. So the Senate Judiciary Committee is led by Lindsey Graham, and they will hold public hearings where they question Barrett on her qualifications, her record, her judicial philosophy, and other opinions on previous cases or constitutional issues. And other witnesses might be called in to testify. So the committee will begin Barrett's confirmation hearing on October 12th. Again, hoping that they can move quickly with this process. So after the hearings, the committee will vote to confirm her or not. Then the vote will be taken to the floor for the full Senate, led by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. As Senate Majority Leader, he really has control over this whole process. So in order to be confirmed, Barrett needs a simple majority. That means that at least 51 out of the 100 senators must vote yes. In the event of a tie, the vice president will be the deciding vote. So next, I'm going to be talking about why Barrett's nomination and confirmation process is unique. And there are four main reasons for that. One, the switch up of the court makeup. Two, the role, or lack thereof, of the filibuster. The timing of it all, and the possibility of a contested election. First, the court makeup. Barrett would be the sixth conservative justice on the Supreme Court, joining Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh. They will sit with the more liberal judges, who are Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Barrett's confirmation would maintain three women on the court, and she would be the sixth Catholic on the bench currently. So, the filibuster. Filibuster has long been used in Congress to block or delay legislative action. Members of Congress who oppose a proposed law or a policy will prolong the debate to prevent a measure from going to a vote. I think one of my first times I was exposed to a filibuster or kind of knew what it was definitely Leslie Knope standing in front of the town council in a Parks and Rec episode, and was at a party for Ben, and she was wearing like a sideways hat and roller skates, and she had to block something from happening, so she had to stand in front of the council for hours and hours just being ridiculous. And that's actually, you know, not that far off from how it usually is without the ridiculous party outfit, but sometimes, I mean, there have been people famously who have just read the phone book up there just to stall. The only way to end a filibuster is to invoke what's called cloture, and that is a motion to vote or limit the consideration time of a bill. It requires a vote of 3/5 of the full Senate, which is normally around 60 votes. So usually you need bipartisan support for this to occur. So in the past, senators could filibuster to block a Supreme Court nomination. But in 2017, Mitch McConnell changed that. During Justice Gorsuch's hearing, Senate Democrats tried to delay the vote after Obama's nominee was denied. So Republicans lowered the number of votes required to end a filibuster from 60 to 51 for Supreme Court hearings. Now they could end the filibuster more easily because they have the majority. And they wouldn't need as many Democratic senators on their side to end the filibuster. So this was known as the nuclear option. So now we get to timing. This is probably the most consequential aspect of this all, and is what is kind of dominating the media right now. Besides Barrett's record and whether she'll vote on Roe v. Wade, this is the biggest issue going on with this Supreme Court confirmation process. So the entire confirmation process usually takes around 70 days, 60 to 90, around there has been the norm for the past couple of nominations. We are less than 40 days away from the election on November 3rd. Just by simple math, if this confirmation process goes by the normal timeline, it shouldn't be all wrapped up and done before the election. However, Republicans really want to power through with this process while Democrats are trying to delay it until after the election is officially decided. So the last time there was a vacant Supreme Court seat during an election year was in February 2016. Justice Scalia had just died and President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to fill the seat. Republican senators were outraged. They were adamant that a Supreme Court seat should not be filled during an election year because the nation would soon vote for a new administration and possibly a different party, and that the newly elected or re-elected president should be the one to push forward their nominee, to nominate someone to fill the seat. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham at the time wanted to set a precedent against Supreme Court nominations during an election year. He said, "I want you to use my words against me. If there's a Republican president in 2016 and a vacancy occurs in the last year of the first term, you can say, Lindsey Graham said, let's let the next president, whoever it may be, make that nomination." Now, Graham and other Republican senators have been called out for hypocrisy for totally flip-flopping on this stance. They insist that Trump should be able to nominate his pick when they refused Obama from nominating his. And again, we are weeks away from the election, not months. However, there is hope for some Democratic senators. Republican Senator Murkowski from Alaska and Collins from Maine said that the next president should nominate the justice to fill this vacancy. So if a couple more Republican or independent senators decide to side with Democrats and delay this process, we might see that happen. But that is yet to be determined because a lot of Republicans are rallying around the support for Trump and his nomination. So if Trump wins the election in November, Barrett will most likely go through this process as normal, unless there is a shift in the Senate makeup and the Democrats win a lot of seats from Republicans. There might be a more difficult time going through. She might not get voted in as the nominee. If Trump loses, however, we will have to see what the next steps bring, because there will be a lot of moving parts there. There might be a new Senate makeup, a new Senate majority leader. We don't know how senators or the president will react to that. We might have to, drop Barrett as a nominee and then wait until Biden is inaugurated in January so that he can put his nominee forward. But again, we're just going to have to see how this all plays out. So the final part that makes Barrett's confirmation process unique is the possibility of a contested election. So with the pandemic, many states have switched to mail-in voting. And voting looks different in every state. Each state is in control of how they conduct their elections. So mail-in ballots might take longer to count. And the outcome of this election most likely will not be determined on November 3rd like it usually is. It might take a couple days or maybe weeks. So President Trump wants to get Barrett confirmed before the election to ensure the conservative court in the event that there is a contested election. The president has repeatedly made the unfounded assertion that November's election will be rigged due to the false claim that mail-in voting cannot be trusted. In the debates, he talked about ballots being thrown in creeks and trash cans. These have all been fact-checked, and they're just simply not true. There's no evidence of this. Several states have been voting by mail for years, and it has gone very well. But there's no evidence that voting by mail is rigged or nefarious in any sense. If the election is close or there are any delays when counting the votes or issues, or Trump is just otherwise unhappy with the results, he claims he will take it to the court to determine the winner. So a federal court can only take up a contested election case if there is an allegation that a constitutional right has been violated. For example, the Equal Protection Clause or the voting rights outlined in the 14th and 15th Amendments. The last time we had a major election contested that had to go to the Supreme Court was in 2000. And it had to do with counting the ballots in Florida. So at the time in Florida, there were these punch card paper ballots where you would kind of stick your pen through a dot indicating the candidate you wanted to vote for, kind of like a hole punch, and the little piece would go through. And then the paper would go through a scanner and it would see where you had poked through the hole, and that would be your vote. However, there was an issue that the piece of paper at the back where you were supposed to poke through would still be hanging on. They were known as hanging chads. And so that when it got put through the scanner, they would be pushed back to cover the hole and it would look like no indentation was made. And so the vote would not be properly counted. If anybody is a How I Met Your Mother fan, you might know Hanging Chad as Ted's costume for several Halloweens in a row when he was trying to find his Slutty Pumpkin misconnection at that one party. But anyway, Bush was projected to win Florida. Gore wanted to take it to the courts for a recount. So the Florida Supreme Court did mandated a recount, but Bush was not satisfied with that. So it got brought up to the Supreme Court. And in Bush v. Gore, the Supreme Court ruled that the recount mandated by the Florida Supreme Court violated the Equal Protection Clause due to a lack of uniformity in determining legal from illegal votes. So this decision determined that Bush had won Florida, and therefore he won the election. So Trump is hoping that he will have some conservative allies on the court if he contests this election. And he wants to make sure that we have the full 9 justices on the court, even though in the Constitution there is no official number of justices that have to stay on the court. And that number 9 has changed many times throughout our country's history. But for the last several decades, it has been 9. So that is a brief overview. It's a lot of information and kind of went through it quickly, but that is enough to get you updated on what the situation is, what the next steps are. But honestly, a lot of the next steps are unknown. It really all depends on what happens with the election. If it is contested, if Trump wins, if Biden wins, what happens with the Senate. If the Senate majority switches from Republican to Democrat, that will affect a lot of things as well. So stay tuned to Tracing Precedent on the pod, but also on the Instagram and just, you know, with your normal news consumption, because this is going to be dominating the headlines for weeks until much later after the election even. So thank you for listening. Thank you for reading and engaging on social media. Please stay tuned for more. You can always comment on the Instagram, shoot me a DM with any questions or any areas that you would like to know more about. And I will try to either make a pod episode or throw something on the Instagram to help explain or clarify some topic. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you soon.